Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Who We Are podcast. My guest, Shu Min, began IVF at just 29, a time when many of her peers were not even thinking of having children yet. And after multiple rounds of treatment and even a miscarriage, she is now a mother of two young girls. But more than that, she's also a mother to a movement. In 2020, she founded Fertility Support Singapore, a community created by and for women navigating fertility challenges, pregnancy loss, and all the unseen in between. This episode is not just about infertility. It's also about how we make space for one another, what it means to hold grief, hope, and uncertainty in the same breath. So whether you've been through this yourself, or know someone who has, or simply want to be a more compassionate human being, this is a conversation I hope that stays with you a long time after it ends. Welcome, Shu Min. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for that beautiful intro. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Yes, I am so excited and, you know, privileged to be able to have you on the show. And I can't wait to dive into your journey. And as I get to know you better also, I think you have so much different aspects of your life that you can talk about. But today I want to perhaps, you know, focus on the journey that you've had when it comes to conceiving and motherhood. So maybe for those of us who may not be as familiar with you yet, could you give us a brief introduction about yourself and where you are in your journey today?
So I'm Shu Min. I got married when I was 25 to buy an HDB flat. It's my
relatable,
mom.
Relatable. Understand, yes.
When we were, so, you know, we did the normal thing. We said, let's try to enjoy life a bit. You know, we're still a bit young. So at 27, we decided to start trying for kids. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, you know, it's going to be dragon year, and then counting and worrying about primary one, because I think there's always this assumption, this belief that, you know, when you want to have kids, you can have kids. And when you're young, you're 28, 30, 33, there's always this, it's going to be fine. It's going to be easy. So we started at 27. And I remember, you know, when you're trying to conceive each month, you know, if your period is late, 1 or 2 days, you get a bit excited, you get the pregnancy tests, and they were all negative. So month after month, you know, first few months, you're a bit excited. And then after a few months, you get a bit wary of even doing those tests, you know, because a bit pantang, I started believing that if I tested that, it would be negative. So that happened for 1 to 2 years. Back then, I didn't know there was a thing called infertility. I didn't know there were things called fertility doctors. I actually wasn't even sure that I wanted to be a mom until 2 years into the journey. We were at a friend's wedding and I saw a university classmate who was pregnant with her second child. And this was a friend's wedding, mind you. And I burst into tears. And I was shocked by how sad I was that I couldn't conceive. And that taught me that wanting a child, you know, wanting to conceive is a very visceral, it's a very basic need and instinct that comes to some of us.
Yes.
Not to all,
yeah,
but to some of us. And so not being able to do something that should be natural, should come naturally to us, is something that is painful. So I told my friend, a colleague, well, you know, I think I'm going to see a gynae because I can't conceive. And then she said, don't be stupid lah. You don't need a gynae. What you need is a fertility specialist. You need someone who does IVF. And she said, go and see my sister, right? And because it was a friend's sister, I had that trust in her. So I went to see her sister, and that started a journey of my IVF journey.
May I ask which year was this that you went through?
2014.
So 2014, okay.
Yeah,
yes. I think 2014 versus today,
yes,
there is more awareness today about,
I hope
you
so.
Know. Yes, yeah. And big thank you because of you and what you've done. But I think 2014, I think it's not something that we even know the language for or even have spoken about. So that was also when perhaps you came to the realization that, okay, your path to motherhood might not unfold the way that you had imagined.
Yeah.
And so it was also then seeking different forms of support.
Yeah.
Before we go there, Shumin, could you also ground us in the definition of infertility?
Right. So infertility is understood as when you're trying to conceive for 1 year, but you can't.
Okay.
So it's not a big term. It's not a medically complex term. It's just you're trying to conceive after 1 year because it takes some time. You know, each round that you each cycle, the chances are supposed to be around one in five. But that gets decreased if, you know, the quality of sperm is not good, if you have too few eggs, so all sorts of factors. But keeping it simple, you're trying for 1 year and you aren't able to conceive, that's infertility. You should see someone about it.
Okay. So for you in your journey, you went to see, and thank God for that friend who redirected you to a fertility expert versus, you know, another guy.
Very blessed,
Wow. Okay. So you went to see her sister in 2014.
Yeah. Yes. So I remember thinking, I'm 29. I shouldn't have to do this, you know. The nurse taught us how to mix the various hormones. So basically, how IVF works is normally each cycle, we have one egg, right? IVF has two parts. The first part is the stimulation phase. So you inject yourself daily. And I had a smiley face at the end of it because you alternate each side. You inject yourself to stimulate more eggs maturing, more eggs being that can be collected.
Yeah.
You then go for the retrieval where you take out the eggs, they go into the lab, they get fertilized, and you count, you know, how many embryos that are formed in the lab. Then you have the second stage, which is putting the embryos back in you. So that's known as the transfer. After you put the embryo back into you, there is this thing called the 2-week wait, where you're just waiting. You're just waiting for your blood test result to know whether you're pregnant. Some people dread it because it can, you know, the thing about it is you have no control. You have no control over how many eggs are going to be to mature, how many eggs are going to fertilize in a lab far away from you, and how many eggs, whether or not your embryo is going to stick. So you just wait and then you pray and you go from there. And if it works, then it's a successful pregnancy and then you continue as per normal.
Yeah. Rewinding a little. What made you decide that, okay, it's time to go for IVF?
Oh, so my friend's sister, we ran the tests. My friend's sister looked at the results and said basically it was not possible for us to conceive naturally. And so IVF was the only option. So it was a no-brainer. There is there's a less invasive procedure, IUI.
Yes.
Some people do that. But that wasn't even an option open to us because of the medical condition that we had.
Thank you for sharing so openly, Shumin, because I think sometimes we take for granted that, you know, like IVF is the only way. However, like you said, there is also IUI, which was something that I went through in trying to conceive my second child, Kira. And I remember Leo and I trying for about 6 months plus, and we decided to go and get checked in case anything had changed after giving birth to Ollie, our first child. So then the doctor also said, okay, because we were kind of hoping that we would conceive soon, she advised that we can try IUI. So that's what I did. And I completely understand what you mean by, you know, also praying and hoping and waiting for the blood results. Yeah. But for us, it was unsuccessful for two rounds. And that's why she said, after that, you can consider IVF, you know. But for us, thankfully, we just took a short trip and a holiday to just have a break before coming back and deciding if we wanted to go with IVF. But thankfully, we conceived naturally then.
Such a blessing.
It is a real blessing. And that's why I am so grateful that, you know, you agreed to come and share about your own journey with IVF. So at 29, you started the process of IVF. So what was it like after going through that first round and, you know, praying and hoping for literally positive results?
Well, one thing that I remember of that round was the nurse was teaching me how to mix all of the medicines. And then she said, now you inject yourself. And then I looked at her and I was like, no. And I steeled myself for a minute. And then I just, you know, jabbed it in. I think it was more, now when I think back, it was more accepting that that's something that you need help with. And that's a path that you need to take. The first round, by the grace of God, it was successful. So I was pregnant for the first time, and it was so joyful. There was just so much joy. And finally telling my mom, you know, finally telling the grandparents. And I remember my husband's smile when, you know, we found out it was a girl.
Oh,
and and my grandmother was like, you know, it's okay even if it's a girl, which was kind of her, you know, but it was, yeah, reflective of that. But at the start of the second trimester, first I was feeling very cold and then I was feeling very hot. But we had just seen the baby scan a few days ago, so I didn't think very much about it. And then the next day, the next morning, I had a difficult hearing. And then in the evening, I started feeling very uncomfortable. And I thought, oh, I better go in to check the next day.
Yeah.
And I checked the next day and I thought I was going in to get Panadol. But the nurse was very kind. She bumped me up the queue so that I could go back to work. And the doctor scans, and my husband wasn't around because I had sent him off to buy breakfast because I was hungry.
Mm.
And the doctor looked at me and said, I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat. And then time stopped a bit. It was the last thing that I expected. And it was, it just came out of the blue. And it started a period of struggling because we had struggled so much to finally be pregnant, and we understood, you know, we had dreams, we had hopes, you know, we finally were going to be a family, and that was taken away. And so that was difficult, but I had a very supportive, I had so many supportive friends, so many supportive colleagues and bosses. And I made it through. I made it through that period. And I share this because miscarriage is also one of the aspects that we focus on in fertility support. After she told me that there was no heartbeat, she said, you know, you can either take a pill and the baby will come out, or you can go for a DNC, which is basically they go in and they take it out.
And this was really second trimester.
It was second trimester. And I remember before they rolled me in, I was thinking, please, when I wake up, could you please tell me that you've made a mistake? But when I woke up, they didn't say that. And there was this, I think what a miscarriage leaves you with is this void. Like you feel really empty, because there was your child, your hopes and your dreams, and then that child is gone. So that was difficult to navigate. But we wanted to restart the next round of IVF as soon as possible. The doctor said, well, wait for your body to heal for a few months. And so we did the transfer a few months later, and by the grace of God, you know, my first child was born. She was born, and I'll tell you this story, it was really funny. After you miscarry, you're grasping at hope. You're looking for anything to give you the hope that you will be able to fill that loss, make good that loss. And I remember going to the forums and, you know, entering the keywords IVF, miscarriage, is there hope sort of thing. And there was one post that struck me. It was, this lady said, 1 year to the day of her miscarriage, she gave birth to her firstborn. And I thought to myself, that must be the luckiest lady on earth. You know, when we were struggling to conceive, my husband and I would sometimes look at young families or families with young kids. I remember there was once we were at Hort Park. We saw them on the swing, and I just thought, those people are so blessed, blessed to have kids. And we were even, you know, talking about, do we want to do adoption? Would we be open to that? Those sorts of things. So I thought, that lady is so, so blessed. And 1 year to the day of my miscarriage, I went to the hospital to be induced to give birth to my first. Like, you couldn't, you couldn't make it up. And my daughter is born on Pregnancy and Infant Loss Remembrance Day. So, you know, it's a, yeah, I can't make this up, but it's 15th October, by the way.
Wow.
But, yeah, so that was the, that was the journey. After the loss came the year of carrying my firstborn. The doctor said, we don't know why you miscarried in the second trimester, but it's so difficult for you to conceive. So could you please just take time off?
Yes.
Just do it properly.
Do it properly.
And my boss was spectacular. You know,
amazing.
I said, this is what my doctor says. Without skipping a beat, he said, take the time that you need. And you know, you come back when you can. And,
wow.
And that was, I'm always grateful for that. Yeah.
You know, Shumin, even as I hear you recount those difficult months and years, which part of everything that you had gone through then was for you most difficult and was the hardest to go through?
I think that there are three things that were difficult. The first was not being in control at all. On this journey, I've met ladies, and there's so many people in this community that have gone through so much more than I have, and really hats off to them. I've met ladies who have changed their shampoo, stopped dyeing, changed their clothes and done everything. You know, they go to TCM, some fly to some temple in Bangkok to touch some statue. But you have no control over it. And as you know, we women sometimes like to know what's going on,
yes.
You know, have a grip on it, and you don't. And so learning to
that
just...
It's almost like that sense of helplessness.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah. And learning to just...
Surrender.
Yeah, exactly. And to just say, I'm just going to do what I can, and whatever it will be, you know, will be. And that sort of acceptance was difficult.
I'm sure. What got you through those days?
Got you through. That was, I guess I have to say, my husband.
Because, Shumin, I think it can be such an isolating journey where, especially back then, you don't even really have those support groups to readily available or accessible. And even the time when you were trying to conceive, maybe perhaps most of your peers were not even
in that same life stage.
Yeah. So you must have felt so alone and
the
so
shame
isolating.
Also, I feel, the stigma and the shame.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's like there's this misconception, there must be something wrong with you because you can't conceive. Like I felt that. It wasn't warranted, now I know. But there is that stigma. It was not a lot of people were going through it. But if I reflect, I wasn't alone because my husband and I were in it together. And I have seen the strongest marriages among some of, you know, the women in this, along this journey, because you really need to band together. Because after all, you're trying to build a family together. That's what this really is, right? And there's no way forward but together.
Yeah. So your husband and his presence and support was everything.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, he was going through it too. Although in IVF, I mean, the physical toll is mostly on the women.
And the miscarriage also.
And the miscarriage. But it was his loss as well.
Yes.
Well, it's his child as well.
Yes.
You know, it was, and it's not easy for him or for any husband to watch your wife go through all that. And some husbands have said that it's painful. One of the husbands once shared about how he wants to do his part, but there's only so much that he can do. So he tries to show up by making sure he knows when the appointments are, you know, showing up. But it's not easy for the husbands as well.
Yeah.
Is one.
And going through the entire period, what do you think you had to unlearn, or what beliefs do you have to reframe for you to survive that period?
After I miscarried, I really felt like I had done something wrong. And I remember apologizing to the people around me because my frame of mind was, the child was in me, I was carrying the child. If I lost the child, I must have done something wrong. That was the logical thinking. Now I know that actually 1 in 4, I think, is the number of pregnancies, you know, end up in miscarriage. It's common. And sometimes there's no reason to it.
Yeah.
Sometimes things just happen. sometimes there's no reason why you can't conceive. Some of the couples have unexplained infertility. Just now you spoke about how, you know, you were struggling to conceive Kira.
Yes.
Secondary infertility is also a real thing, which is where you've already conceived the first. You may not have had issues conceiving the first, but you have problems conceiving the second. That too is a real thing.
Mm.
And sometimes, you know, some people feel all the more frustrated because, you know, I had no problems with the first. Why am I having problems with the second? Yeah, but sometimes there's just no reason for it. Mm. Sometimes things just happen that way for reasons that we don't know, and you just go with the flow. It's just...
So in that sense, trying to detach a little bit and not blame yourself.
Yeah.
It was important in your journey.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, Shuming, you spoke earlier about the shame that came with it for you.
Mm.
What role did shame play in your journey? And also, how did this journey challenge your sense of womanhood?
The stigma, I think amongst our generation, I think it's definitely gotten better, but it's always a bit difficult to say, and I know it's very difficult for many women to say that, oh, I'm trying, but I'm struggling to conceive. It's not something that you want to be open about to most people.
Yeah.
It's not something that's easy to say. Back then, there weren't a lot of people talking about it. There weren't a lot of people posting about it. But now I think we have, at least over the last few years, seen more people
coming out to share.
But many are also anonymous because we in our community, we have people, sometimes they'll tell me, I follow your account, but I don't click follow because if I follow, then people will know that I have issues. Yeah.
I see.
So on Facebook, we have an open Facebook group, but actually the real conversations are in the private Facebook group. And, you know, we screen through questions because sometimes, you know, people don't even want other people to know that they're part of that because that's the level of the stigma for some people.
What would you say to someone who's listening now and feeling that shame and stigma from not being able to conceive yet?
I would say it's not your fault. There's nothing wrong with you. It wasn't my fault. It's not your fault. And I would also say that you're not alone. What you're going through, probably someone around you is going through as well. Just that the both of you don't know it. What you're going through is normal. So many people nowadays are having these same struggles. And it's absolutely not your fault. It might feel like it's your fault.
Yeah.
But I can tell you for a fact that it is not your fault.
I love that, you know, Shumin, also because it is more common than we think.
Yeah.
The statistic, I think, is 1 in 6 women face issues or challenges in conceiving.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I really wanted to have this conversation with you was also because I was having a conversation with my younger colleague and just catching up and chatting. And I did not know that she was actually going through challenges conceiving and was potentially exploring IVF after having tried for a while. And obviously it's taken a toll on her mental state, you know, and affected her in that sense. And my heart really goes out because it felt like she was all alone in this journey and didn't know how to navigate it. And it almost seems like sometimes even I feel like as someone, a friend or a colleague supporting someone through this journey, I don't really know what to say or what not to say or how to encourage or what might be helpful or not helpful. So, you know, in your journey, and what are some things also, I think words can be so powerful, but they can also wound and they can also hurt someone. So what are some words that have been helpful or unhelpful and even hurtful in the journey that you went through?
The number one unhelpful thing to say.
Yes, please tell us.
Is very easy one. Just relax and then you'll have a kid. That is the number one most unhelpful thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, I say it lightly, but people still say that.
Yes.
Also, sometimes what can be triggering is when you say, hey, when are you going to have kids? You know, or you've been married for so long, you know, are you going to have kids? You know, about time to have kids.
Mm.
So what I've changed to now is I now ask, and me being very capable, I now ask, is having kids part of your plan?
Okay.
Because it might not be part of everyone's plan.
Mm.
And so it's a way of respecting that. But also, you know, asking what you want to ask.
So is having kids part of your plan?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another thing that I think helps people who are going through the journey is to just be present, to just show up for them, and to just check in once in a while.
Okay.
Without giving advice, without giving recommendations, but just the small thing of, oh, how are you doing? How's your journey going so far? Just knowing that you think about them and you are there to support without imposing anything, because everyone's thoughts, everyone's priorities, everyone's reactions would be different.
Yeah.
That I think really helps, because it can be a long journey. For me, I was really blessed because, you know, it took me, well, under 2 years for me to
it's still a significant time.
Yeah, but I'm the lucky one, right? There are many women who have gone through, continue to go through this for years. And their strength is just incredible. But, you know, just being there, showing up for them is huge. The last thing that, and it's a line that I like to tell couples, and it's something that I believe in, which is, you will have the children that you are meant to have at the time that you are meant to have them.
Can you please repeat that again? It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
But it's true though. You will have the children that you're meant to have at the time that you were meant to have them. And I know that from personal experience. When I see my two daughters, when I remember what I had to go through to be blessed with them, it's a journey, and it's, you know, everyone's ending will be different. In this community, I've seen women who thankfully succeed. Some turn to surrogacy, some adopt, some say, I've tried, I'm at peace, I'm done.
Yeah.
And all of the endings are to be respected, are there's no one ending that's better than the other, you know? So it's I think having the acceptance that everyone's ending is different, everyone's timing is different. You're meant to have a child. You will have it at the time that you are meant to have. That I think is wow, something that is important
beautiful
for people to know.
And it's something that we should hold on to.
Mm.
You know, Shumina, as I was also sharing about my colleague and I was chatting with her, I also feel a sense of heaviness that she was carrying. And from your experience and journey, and also in your interactions with many of these women, what are some of the silent griefs that women carry that are not talked about enough?
I think one is obviously society sometimes has these expectations of what a wife should do, you know, of what, if you're married, what you should do, right? And some women, rightly or wrongly, feel that there's a role that they have to play.
Mm.
That I think is changing.
Mm.
But in particular in some communities, that is even stronger, because, you know, you see your friends having children. Yeah, they're on to their second, third child. You can't conceive. There is this, I'm not playing my part. There's something wrong with me and I'm not playing my part. So not being able to fulfill that duty, some people see of it as duty, is, I think, one of the challenges.
When it comes to perhaps loss, miscarriage, infertility, there's a lot of societal pressures that we need to stay hopeful. And we need to, you know, stay positive that, you know, it will happen, it will come. But how do you also navigate that while also making space for that despair and sadness that comes along with the journey?
Yeah, it's a bit... The weirdest part is you know that you have to be hopeful, but at the same time, you know, you're struggling with disappointment and grief. So so during my year off, I took a course in counseling, and one of the conveners said something which is, and I've told many women this: visualize your womb as a place of light, because you know when you transfer the embryo back in, you want the womb to be a place of light, a place of warmth, a place of optimism, of hope.
Yeah.
So that kind of helps to dissociate between, you know, the grief or the disappointments that are going on up there,
yeah.
And to just focus on, okay, can just visualize that being a place of light. And that I think is one of the things that I now say to women who are on the path. Another one that I thought was very powerful was, how do you hold your hope when you go through these treatments? Because, you know, you imagine you've struggled for 2 years. This is really, you know, you're jabbing yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you're really going to, and you have hope, but then again, you don't really dare to hope because you've been disappointed for so long.
So you want to also, in a sense, protect yourself against too deep a disappointment by managing your expectations.
So the visualization exercises, hold your hope like you would a little egg in your cuspid, you know, in your palm. So you're not holding it too tightly so that you crush it, but you just hold it gently and you hold space there. And so that I thought was a very helpful way of just balancing and managing hope. But hope is everything.
Yeah.
You know. At the same time, you know, we don't want to give unrealistic hope. So it's a balance. It's an important balance.
What I love about you, Shumin, is also that you didn't waste the pain that you went through. And, you know, from that personal grieving and healing process also led you to public action by starting Fertility Support Singapore, a great community that you've built for the last 5 years. So could you tell us more about that and what drove you to decide to start something?
The first thing is, I didn't start it alone. There were many incredible, incredible women.
Yeah.
And so many, like I said, it's an instant sisterhood.
Yeah.
So what started it was when I went for my first transfer.
And this was?
2014.
Okay.
Yes, 2014. And as I was going for the transfer, they have this, they call it counseling, but it's financial counseling. And they said, oh, because you're in Mount E, because my friend's sister was at Mount E, it's not a public hospital, you don't get the government grant. And then I went, what? The government pays you for this? The government subsidized this? And I didn't know.
You didn't even know?
Nothing. I knew nothing of that. I said,
because it might have perhaps changed some of the decisions that you made. Right.
Yeah. And I was like, I didn't know. So for the longest time, what was on my heart was just to have a website. Just to have a website that consolidated information. First told people what was IVF because I had no clue. I literally was just following the doctor's instructions every step of the way and learning along the way. But a website that told people what's IVF, what's IUI, what's infertility. What are the CPF grants
available to
available?
Support, yeah,
yeah, and so that was an idea that I wasn't the first one to have it. There were other women who had the same idea, and so there were initial discussions in 2016, 17 to start something up. But you know, life takes place. People have children, things fall away by the side.
Yeah,
and in 2020. COVID, yeah, everyone's stuck at home. And I thought, by then my younger one was had turned one already. And I thought, well, maybe I'll stuck at home. Now's the time to do something. So I remember putting out, there was another IVF group on Facebook. I put out a post saying, look, this is the vision. Would you like to contribute? And the community was overwhelming. Like so many women said, yes, I went to Instagram, hashtag IVFSG. I cold messaged them to say, hey, this is what I'm thinking of doing. Would you like
at
to
least
come
are volunteers?
They're all volunteers.
Because this is a non-profit.
They are, exactly. And that's why I say, I'm not doing this alone. There's so many women who came on board and who said, yes, this is absolutely needed in Singapore. So I remember we had all these Zoom meetings back then, it was COVID, to just get to know each other. And I met an incredible group of ladies who came together. We split up the website, split up the content. Each person, you know, took a separate chapter. Then we launched the website. And then we had this Instagram account and we didn't know what to do with it. You know, we just took the handle. And I really, I know at the beginning we had
no five-year business plan.
Absolutely not. It was entirely organic. It was, you know, at first we thought, I just wanted to give hope. So we started doing these motivational posts. And then we started sharing stories. Some of the women were so talented in Instagramming, putting up the stories. And we got a huge reaction to the stories. So that showed me that taught me that sharing stories is the most powerful way to normalizing it, because when you're going through that, you're reading stories, you know for a fact you're not alone.
Yeah.
Somebody else is doing that. So that started gaining traction. Many private clinics were helpful and, you know, supportive in doing Instagram live sessions with doctors. And I counted every single follower from 1 to 1,000. And
amazing.
By the grace of God, today we now have more than 9,000 followers on Instagram. And we have this amazing group of women who volunteer their time because they want to give back, because they know the pain and they're all driven by the same thing. They inspire me. They want to help. And they are so passionate about it because they know the pain. And it's honestly a privilege to know them.
And you mentioned also in one of the interviews, Shumin, that you believe that no one should be walking through this journey alone. What does, in your opinion, what does real soul-level support look like in this journey?
When you say that, the first thing I think of are our meetups, our in-person meetups.
The physical meetups.
Yeah, we do that. And it's special when it's face-to-face and you can really can hold their hands and, you know, you can literally tell them that you're not alone. But in today's day and age, support also, we do many different avenues of support. Another one is the content that we push out. And we came up with a roster. Monday's motivational. Tuesday, we share stories. Friday, we give information. We give practical tips. And, you know, the amazing thing is that every post is created with love, with sincerity by a volunteer, not by a paid staff. All of it is by a volunteer that has gone through the same thing. And so there's literally speaking to the community that is going through it.
And genuinely and generously just sharing.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, Shumin, recently you also launched Singapore's first workplace fertility guidebook.
Yes.
Did I get it correct?
You did. Not me. Fertility support it, but yes.
Okay, yes. But okay, you and the community launched Singapore's first fertility guidebook. And what? Tell us more about that. And what do you hope that it shifts?
So that started because in our meetups, there were so many women that said, no, we want real support. So many people were saying, I can't take time off. So remember I told you the first part of IVF, you have to scan every 2 weeks. You actually need to calibrate the dosage of the hormones. So every other day, you're going to the doctor, he's scanning the ovaries, and then he will, you know, tweak the medicine as required. So it's a huge chore to have to go every other day, you know, and explain it to your supervisor or to your colleagues why you're in late 1 to 2 hours. So many women were saying, look, I'm struggling with that. I'm struggling with how do I get how do I even tell my boss? Some of them, you know, they have male bosses. Mm. They find it difficult to broach the topic even. It's a bit hard. And so we thought, well, something has to be done.
Mm. You know, systemic level.
Yes. And so this idea came about, but we were very blessed with the people that joined the sisterhood to really work on it. There are two people that stand out. One was Simran. She was from SGH Empowerment. She comes in and she says, we need data on this. So we need to understand, and we now have the data, which is more than 40% say that infertility has affected their work. They've taken a back seat, they've changed jobs, they've stopped work altogether just to focus on treatment. That's a huge number.
It's a huge number.
About one third didn't even tell their workplaces that they were undergoing infertility because they were worried about the stigma. What are some of the concerns? Some of them say, well, first, I don't know how to raise it. Second, I'm worried that if I raise it, I'm going to take a hit. People are not going to promote me. People are not going to give me the next big project.
So it will affect their chances of progress at the workplace.
So one lady in the community shared in one of our sensing polls that her boss actually told her, maybe you're not meant to have kids. So that still happens in 2025.
This day and age.
Yeah. So we got the data. We realized, you know, the numbers. And then it came to drafting the guidebook. And the guidebook, one of the ladies, Sinley, very generously said, she said, I'm going to take the pen. I'm going to come up with the framework. And it was an iterative process. I mean, everyone chipped in. But for her to take that mantle was huge. And it was really generous.
Wow.
So it's really amazing the commitment that these ladies have to transforming their pain into purpose.
Yes.
It's inspirational.
So inspirational and beautiful to witness.
Mm. Yeah.
And on that note, what do you think we as, you know, organizations, leaders, colleagues, what are some small but powerful ways that we can also do to support our colleagues or employees who are seeking fertility help?
So I think practically, it's really the mindset shift. It's really sending the message that we know that these are struggles. These are real struggles. We respect them and we'll give you the space. What does that translate to in real terms? Some companies might have an articulated policy. Other companies have awareness roundtables. So we do host roundtables, closed-door sessions and dialogues in businesses. Mm. Because we've noticed that actually sometimes people do want to help. They just don't know what actually the problem is.
Yeah.
They don't know what the treatment processes is.
Yes.
And so they don't know what to say. So if they would just... So we go in, you know, we share our stories. We tell them what the process is like. And so that hopefully will start the normalizing process. It will, you think about it, if you are someone who's trying to tell your boss and, you know, there's a round table or there's a support session at a lunchtime where it's already being spoken about,
yes,
it's just that much easier to raise it after that.
Mm.
I mean, we're also working to roll out the guidebook and to bring it to more companies and to work with more of them, and hopefully that will gain traction.
Yes. Yes, and I think, you know, like just getting more awareness on this topic and what it's like. Where can we, for those of us who are interested, where can we get this workplace fertility guidebook?
So we have a website, fertilitysupport.sg, and you can download it from our website.
Okay, so we can download it, share it with, you know, our organizations, our HR teams, or even our managers. Yeah. You know, Shumin, as we also wrap up, I wanted to ask if we could go back to younger Shumin, who was perhaps deep in the dark days of despair, disappointment, and feeling like, you know, you're not sure whether there's any hope or whether things might work out the way you hope for it to. And even the Shumin who was sitting anxiously at the waiting room of the clinic, what would you say to her?
I would say, hold on. When I was going through the journey, I wanted to know how it ended. So many times I told God, especially after the miscarriage, I said, why would you give me something and then take it away? You know, if you want, don't give me love. Don't give and take away. Don't give me the hope, give me the dreams, and then take it away. And I also said, just let me know how it ends. Am I going to have kids? Am I not going to have kids? Because if I'm not going to have kids, can I spare myself this all of this? But I've learned that sometimes we just have to walk the path. And the lessons that we need to learn in walking the path. Now, when I was 29, I couldn't understand why I had to do IVF. I was resentful. It doesn't make sense. You know, you're in your 20s. Why do I have to do IVF? Now, today, I'm so grateful that I did it when I was 29 because I'm grateful for the community. I'm grateful that I can journey. I have the privilege of working with and journeying such incredibly strong ladies. But all this you don't know unless and until you walk the path. And it's not easy, right? We just want to know the ending. We just want to know how it ends. But sometimes you just have to hold on and you just have to go through all of that. That's what I would say.
That's beautiful. And also to know that they're not alone. They don't have to go through it alone.
Yeah. And hopefully we've changed that. So yes. are changing that.
Yes. And, you know, Shumin, thank you so much for all the amazing work that you and your team at Fertility Support Singapore do for the community and more. If we want to find out more about the group, where can we get more information or even join the group?
So first, definitely please go to our Instagram account. Our handle is fertilitysupport.sg.
Okay.
That has links to our private Facebook group, to our website that has the guidebook. And again, when you go there, just know that it is a labor of love. The website, the content, the design, it's a labor of love by real women who have gone through the journey, and every single post on our Instagram is a labor of love by someone else who has gone through that path. But thank you so much, you know, for having me and for shining the spotlight on these issues and trying to help us to normalize these issues. Sincerely, thank you.
Thank you, Shumin, for also, you know, wholeheartedly and openly sharing your journey with us and the struggles. Do you have any last words or message that you would want to share to anyone who's listening to this conversation?
I would say, if you're going through this struggle now, you're not alone. Reach out to us if you need anything. And I would just end with, you will have the child that you're meant to have at the time that you're meant to. I know it's not easy. I know it's not easy, but just hold on until then. You know, be okay.
Thank you so much, Shumin.
Thank you.